This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online at TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Sean LeCumber is going to be performing. 7:15 is sold out. Some tickets, very few remaining for the 10 o'clock show. Get them at rumorscomedyclub.com. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by the assistant to the general manager and goaltending coach of the Arizona Coyotes, Sean Burke. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Appreciate you joining us this afternoon, Sean, especially on a game day with the Coyotes being in Minnesota later on this evening to play the Wild. Wanted to start off by asking you about how your responsibilities in the Coyotes organization have changed since former assistant general manager Brad Treliving took his position as the new Calgary Flames general manager.
Well, you know what? I really hasn't changed that much during the hockey season. When Brad was here, I worked closely with him during the year, but as a coach as well, I'm usually with the team full-time during the season. When the season ends and then we get into the draft, the free agency and scouting meetings, I'm part of that as well. But during the season, we're it's pretty tied up. We've got Don, obviously, as our general manager. We brought in Darcy Regier this year, so there's a lot of guys around, and it's good for me. I've had an opportunity to do a lot of different things, gain a lot of experience. But once the season starts, it's pretty full-time coaching.
Hey, Sean, you mentioned Darcy Regier there, and you mentioned also that you're more involved in the coaching aspect during the season. But what is Darcy Regier? You know, obviously many years in Buffalo. What is his experience and meant to the management team, and what does he bring more than anything else?
Well, yeah, I think he's obviously that's the key. He's an experienced guy. He was in Buffalo for a lot of years. I know Don and him are very close. They've been friends forever. And I think more than anything, Don, when he lost Brad, Brad was outstanding. Just extremely hardworking guy. Somebody that was, in touch with not only the NHL, but all the minor leagues, junior, hardworking, but also very, very up on all the players. So, when he left, it was definitely a hole for us. And everybody can see how well he's doing in Calgary. Mm-hmm. But I think Don wanted somebody that he felt comfortable around, somebody that, a confidant sort of thing. And I think Darcy fills that role with Don, somebody that they can throw ideas around together.
Do they have ties back to the Islanders? Is that correct?
Yeah, they do, actually. They go way back with the Islanders. We all know how it works in this business. At times, especially like I said, when we lost somebody like Brad, I think Don felt that I'm sure there was some people out there that were maybe younger and less experienced, but I think Don felt at that point that he really needed somebody who was comfortable around. And Darcy, the little bit that I've got to know him, he's a very nice person. He's a guy that's seen a lot. And he's come in and he's been a calming influence for Don.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Arizona Coyotes goaltending coach and assistant to the general manager, Sean Burke. Sean, obviously another ownership change in Arizona recently. Andrew Barraway is now the majority owner of the team. How has that transition to a new owner affected the team's budget for future, if at all?
Well, that's, it's an ongoing process. There's a lot of balls up in the air right now, so to speak. And we're all waiting as well to see how it plays out. We're in a bit of a unique situation this year coming into the season. We planned on being a team that was going to compete for a playoff spot. And then hopefully as you get closer to the playoff run, ownership has the ability to provide some money to make deals that maybe can put you over the top. And so that's changed with the type of season we've had so far. We're not a playoff contender at the moment. And with a new ownership, I think that's probably discussions that they're having every day, is trying to figure out where you go from here. Do you blow this up and head in the youth direction, or do you look to next year to maybe add a few pieces and try to be a playoff contender? So there's a lot of discussions going on, and I don't know if there's one right answer right now, but I definitely know that we're a team that this is going to be the third year if we don't make the playoffs. When that starts to happen, you've got to find answers and solutions in a hurry.
Yeah, Sean, you guys traded Devin Dubnyk this week. We'll ask you about him in a second and the effect really you had on his career. In terms of mentioning that really, 14 points back of the Kings, you guys are a seller. Is that an advantage at all? In the big picture, is that an advantage at all? Because we were talking earlier in the show, there's so many teams in this league now with the parity that are kind of in but not in, but they don't really know. And then you have a few teams that are really at the top, but they know they're trying to go for the cup. And to be a team that's out of it, at least at this point in time, does that give maybe the management an advantage in terms of mapping out how to deal with the trade deadline?
I think it can. I think the danger there is, you have to make the right moves. And unfortunately, in this organization, we've already been through one rebuild, and didn't do a very good job of it. We had a lot of high draft picks, going back to Kyle Turris, Blake Wheeler, and we had Kiepenhoff as a first rounder. And if you look at that period where the team missed the playoffs for 6 or 7 years in a row and had high draft picks, we should be benefiting from that now, and we're not, because we didn't do a very good job of it. So it can help you map out a plan, but you have to execute that plan. You have to have the right people in place to do it. You have to have a good scouting staff that you rely on, and I think we have a lot of those pieces in place, but you still need to get the job done. So it all sounds good when you're talking about it in theory, but in practice you really have to make the right moves.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Sean Burke. Sean is the Coyotes' assistant to the general manager and goaltending coach. Now, Sean, when you're at tonight's game in Minnesota against the Wild, you'll look across the ice and you'll see a familiar face in Devin Dubnyk, who up until Wednesday afternoon was a member of the Coyotes. You brought him in this offseason after his struggles in Edmonton, then he went to Nashville and briefly to Montreal all last season. What was the key to turning around his season, turning around his career prior to getting traded to Minnesota earlier this week?
Yeah, well, I didn't look at Devin as having to turn around his career. I think that he's a guy that he's had some good time in this league. He's been a good player for Edmonton. He had a really tough year last year, as everybody knows, bouncing around and losing his confidence. And I think that really can beat you down as a player and make you question your own ability. But I looked at Devin as a guy that we just wanted to get back to a level that he's played at, and hopefully get him feel better about himself and realize that he is a good player and he can be a good player in this league. And he was a real easy project. I did enjoy working with him because he came in with a very, very good attitude and just try and get better. He worked extremely hard for us, very low-maintenance guy, and I'm happy for him. I think that, it was tough to see him go, but he's going to get an opportunity in Minnesota. He may get himself a new contract, an opportunity to be a number one guy again, and you like to see that happen for good guys and kids that work hard to put themselves in that position. So it's bittersweet. Tough to lose him on one hand, but on the other hand, going forward, Mike Smith is our guy. We need him to play at a higher level, and a competition at that position for us right now is not what we're looking for. We're looking for Mike to grab hold of things again and to be a guy for us. And Devin was starting to take over some of that playing time, which is a good thing in some ways, but that's not really a situation we want to be in.
And you brought up Mike, and you've done a nice job turning around, maybe not turning around necessarily, but getting the potential out of Mike Smith in the past that some thought he had, certainly back to Dallas and Tampa Bay days, Sean. He's a bigger goalie like you were when you played in the National Hockey League. Are his problems now, is it mental more than anything?
Well, I think it always is for any player who's a proven player in this league, for a guy that has had success and is showing people that he's a top player. I think when those type of players struggle, it's usually confidence. It's usually mental. And, there's a lot of things that can go into that. It's it's a hard question to answer because, you know, as much as we every day see these guys at the rink, we don't know what's going on in their lives, what other things they're dealing with, what personal issues they may have. And, you know, sometimes it's, unfortunately, you can't separate those. When you come to the rink, you're a professional. You have to, you know, find a way to get your job done. But I think it is mental for most guys. I think for Mike Smith right now, he has lost a little bit of confidence. He has questioned, you know, what kind of player he really can be. And it's my job as a coach to get him back to that level, but it's also his responsibility at the end of the day to believe in himself, to find a way to get the job done. We're, you know, I always say it's kind of cliche, but we're not paid to play this game. We're played to win. And you know, that's what we expect from him, is to be a guy that every night goes out there to win hockey games for us.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Sean Burke. Sean is the assistant to the general manager and goaltending coach of the Arizona Coyotes, who will be in Winnipeg tomorrow evening to play the Winnipeg Jets.
Sean, I want to ask you kind of like a hockey theory question, and you know, you've been involved with Team Canada before. We're going to ask you about your involvement with Hockey Canada, but just from a bigger picture, you look at the teams around the National Hockey League now, and maybe even a few years back, Boston, LA, and obviously LA winning last year, but it seems like there's a trend towards those skating teams, and then the size and then the cycle game, while important, if you can't skate in the NHL in this day and age, you really can't keep up. Is that the biggest change that you've seen in the game over the past 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I'd have to say that's probably the number one change. You know, I think it's right up there with the goaltending, to be honest. I think that goaltending has got better across the board. I think every team now has two, maybe three guys that on any given night are capable of going out there and being the first star of the hockey game. And, you know, in the past, every team had a good goalie, but usually the backup wasn't going to challenge for the number one spot. So I think goaltending's definitely been, the bar has been raised in our league. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the skating, the speed of the game, you know, it's hard to imagine the Dave Andrzejczyks and the Luke Robitaille and those guys who were great, great players and very effective, being able to be as effective in today's game. With the rule changes and the different things that have come along. So I think it's made the game better, the speed and the intensity of it. But it is a little bit of a shame sometimes because it seems to have eliminated some of those character guys who weren't a great skater but battled in front of the net, paid the price to score goals. You're not seeing as much of that anymore.
Sean, your international career playing for Team Canada is well documented. We all remember your performance in 1988 at the Olympics in Calgary. You know, how have you enjoyed your role with Hockey Canada's Program of Excellence Management Group?
I really enjoyed it. I feel very fortunate that I had such a great experience as a player, playing in so many international events and playing when Canada had a national team, which is, you know, unheard of anymore. But you know, I'm very grateful to Bob Nicholson, Scott Salmon, and now Tom Rennie for keeping me in that Hockey Canada loop. And, you know, this year was very enjoyable, being part of that World Junior team. Last year I was a part of it as well. It didn't go quite as well for us, but just to be around those teams, to get the experience, the management side of things, it's really interesting. And Hockey Canada is a really good model, even for an NHL team. The way they do things, how professional they are, how detailed they are, and all the little things they do, and the way they treat their players and the families. It's really interesting to be around it because there's some lessons you can take back to your NHL team.
Final question for you, Sean. We certainly appreciate your time today, as Drew mentioned, on a game day. Goaltender development in Canada, you know, you being involved in the Hockey Canada Program of Excellence, and there's been much talk about it for the past couple of years now about the development of goaltenders in the Canadian, you know, in Canadian systems. Do you think that is an issue, or do you think that is overblown? And if so, why?
I think it's both. You know, I think that there's no doubt, you look around the NHL, there's very few Canadian goaltenders compared to what there was 10, 15 years ago. But, you know, I don't know if that's as much of a problem in our development as it is in the other countries that just closed the gap. And, you know, if you think of Finland and Sweden, those are countries that never really could compete with Canada on the international level and tried to figure out a way to become more competitive. And they looked at it and said, well, goaltending may be one area. So they've taken a lot of time, put a ton of resources into their young goaltenders. They're smaller countries, so they can identify maybe good goaltenders at a younger age and really stick with those kids and work with them. Canada's such a big country, there's a lot of kids playing. You know, it's not maybe as easy for us to identify at a young age the top goalies. And, but I think and this year proved it to me with the World Junior team. We had two very, very good goaltenders who were as good as anybody in that tournament. And I don't think there's nearly as big a problem as everybody likes to make it out. But the other countries have definitely started to produce some pretty good goalies.
Sean Burke is the assistant to the general manager of the Arizona Coyotes. He's also the goaltending coach. Sean, really appreciate your time, and best of luck to yourself and the Coyotes going forward this season.
I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Thanks very much, Sean. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. When we return, we'll talk about Mark Stahl, New York Rangers defenseman, and his contract extension.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on this week's show, Arthur Staple from Newsday will join us to talk about the Eastern Conference leading New York Islanders. A big thank you to Coyotes goaltending coach and assistant to the general manager, Sean Burke, for just joining us.
Really good.
Yeah, really good. I mean, Sean Burke, I mean, you know, that I still have vivid memories of that 88 Olympics in Calgary, the heroic efforts that he went through there. And
you were 32, so it's easier for you to remember.
Exactly. Yeah. It was right in the prime of my life, of course, so of course I remember that. But no, really good, and really appreciate him joining us on a game day, of course, the Coyotes playing in Minnesota tonight. And, I mean, I know he's on the opposition side, but it's got to be somewhat rewarding for him to see Devan Dubnyk and the bounce back season he has had after really what was a disastrous year for him last year in Edmonton. And you know, Sean Burke certainly deserves a lot of that credit for getting Dubnyk back playing good hockey, and as a result, his team got an extra third round pick out of it. So it's sort of a win-win situation for both the player and the former team. And well, the Minnesota Wild hope for that he continues that good performance there.
Absolutely, and he's done a nice job turning around goaltenders' careers.
Sure, Mike Smith, you mentioned it in the interview as well.
It's Mike Smith, there's Devan Dubnyk, as we just spoke about. Ilya Bryzgalov, under his tutelage, was very successful in Arizona, so certainly a very smart hockey mind.
Yeah, so obviously Hockey Canada, there's a reason why he's involved in the program of excellence there, because they know a smart hockey mind when they see it. In case you missed that interview, it will be available on iTunes on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Richie, Mark Stahl, he was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Reports indicate, first emanating out of New York via Larry Brooks of the New York Post, that Stahl was closing in on signing a six-year, $33.6 million contract extension with the Rangers. Salary cap hit per season of $5.6 million. You know, you're a big fan of Mark Stahl's game.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a key signing that the Rangers need to get this done and not couldn't afford to lose him in the free agency?
100%. No question about it. Top four guy, him, McDonough, and Girardi are the core of that team on the back end. They've got a nice performance this year from Kevin Klein and such. But I mean, Mark Stahl's just so smart, Drew. He's not flashy. He's not going to be your offensive dynamo, though he can play in an offensive second power play role if you need him to, and he can make a nice first pass for sure. I mean, that's the key to his game. Very smart. Reads the game especially well. Can be physical if you need to. Your solid top four guy and good in the room by all accounts. He's imperative to what they're doing there, and they needed to get him signed. And then he goes to the market, he makes big money. He doesn't make stupid decisions. And he's, you know, since the eye injury, after he came back from the eye injury, his game wasn't the same. He's adjusted. His game is back up to that level, I think, that it was before the injury. And a core piece of that team. And that team's been very good. You know, certainly their run there, about 13-1 over course of 14 games, blowing through California, winning in LA, Anaheim, and San Jose, which is rarely completed. We're rarely done. I don't remember the last time that happened. So
yeah, where you can go through those three teams and sweep them. That's tremendous performance. It tells you that the Rangers right now, I mean, they're not world beaters in the Eastern Conference,
but they have been lately.
Yeah, sitting in the first wild card position, but that's a dangerous team, especially with that kind of defensive depth, like you mentioned. You know, McDonough and Girardi, and to have a guy like Mark Stahl who can play in a first pairing role, and he's sort of playing the second pairing almost with Dan Boyle there. Lot of depth on the Rangers' blue line. Any concerns that there's too much money that the Rangers have locked up on their back end?
That is a concern, especially when, I mean, I think you have to, when you ask that, Drew, and I think that's a fair question. Now, they got McDonough on a nice deal.
Yeah.
right now.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's a that gives you some extra value. Sure, you have to pay Girardi and you have to pay Staal. I think when you ask it combined with the Henrik Lundqvist money, then you're talking, okay, you know, where's the money up front? And that's a concern. Having said that, they're always going to be a max team on the cap. Mm-hmm. You know that. They're always going to spend as much money as they possibly can. And the guys that they're paying are the right guys. Like, they're paying the guy. They're not paying Dion Phaneuf $8.5 million, whatever it is. It's that idea. So if you're going to pay, make sure you nail it, right? And Mark Staal is giving you 22 minutes a night. 22 minutes. And, you know, and he's playing 2.5 minutes shorthanded. So you're getting hard minutes. He can play second power play again if you want him to. He doesn't need to. And they have him in certain roles there, right? But you have him playing hard minutes. You have McDonough, Staal, and Girardi all logging over 22 minutes, 22 or over minutes a game. That's your core.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to, you better pay the right guys. The McDonough contract, though, I mean, Glenn Sather, Jeff Gordon, again, done a nice job here. They don't get scared off by free agency. Leverage, you know, again, with Ryan Callahan, say what you will about the move and with the first round pick and all that. Mari St. Louis helped take them to the Stanley Cup final last year. I mean, they'll probably take that chance. They'd make that trade again, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you that they would make that trade again. It ended up pretty well getting to the Stanley Cup final. You know, can anything be taken from the Staal contract vis-a-vis a guy like Dustin Byfuglien?
Not really, Drew. They're such different players, right? You know, Staal's going to be your left side stay-at-home guy who plays a really dependable guy. Byfuglien is your not as much of a gambler as before, mind you, but, you know, still plays, takes some risks. He's an offensive guy, Byfuglien, you know. And
you pay for offense.
And you pay for offense. Doesn't mean you don't pay for defense, but, I mean, you're going to pay for the offense as well, and you're going to take the risk of, you know, the conditioning and sometimes the focus and, you know, how he fits in on a team if he was to go somewhere else. So I always think a defensive signing in the UFA market, which Staal was a pending UFA, will have effect on the market. Do I think it will have a direct effect on Dustin Byfuglien's, you know, prospective contract? No, but it will have an effect.
If Staal had gone to free agency, if he had decided to test the waters, does he make more money, you think?
Yeah. There's always a team that will pay more money. I mean, think about some of the teams out there, Drew, that need to shore up their back end.
Sure.
You know.
Pretty much, you know, almost 30 NHL teams, you could
What about
say.
Carolina? Maybe he wants to go play with his brothers. And
are you surprised he didn't go play with his brothers?
Well, they're so far away from winning. Look where New York is. I mean, mm-hmm. First of all, you're playing in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's
playing for the New York Rangers. You're playing on a team with a bunch of talent. You just went to the Stanley Cup final. Are you going to go to Carolina and hope they net out Eichel or McDavid and then try and redo it with that squad? I mean, sure, you could play with your brothers and all that, but I don't know. You can think of how much would Edmonton pay Mark Staal in the free agent market?
I'm sure he could have gotten.
They pay him 6 years, 42 probably.
Yeah, he gets $7 million. You know, in the free.
What's he worth to them? More than, of course. I mean, that's the thing. He would make more money. He's comfortable where he is. You know. That's fine. I don't think it's a crazy undermarket deal. Like, I think maybe some of the Brodin, I thought was a, or Brody even, were really undermarket deals, if anything. But this is a UFA guy, and he gets that term as well. So
comfortable there in New York, like you said. You know, 28 years old now. You know, any thoughts that his play might, you know, drop off because as he gets into his early 30s there?
I think you're more concerned about that at 34, 35, and the contract will take him right up to that point.
Sure.
And then you'll see. More, you know, a defensive defenseman might have more wear on the tire than your offensive guy who doesn't take as much contact.
Does he play a rugged style? I mean, is his style that, you know, he's going to get?
You know, he can, well, I mean, you're playing shorthanded minutes, you're playing in a defensive role, those are rugged minutes.
Sure.
All right? You know, is he going to be running around a position to hip guys? No, but he'll make contact when he needs to. Smart player. He's very, that's what I keep saying, he's a very smart player. Just knows how to play the game, knows where to be. I think certainly a consideration probably for the Canadian Olympic team coming up in 2018 in Pyongyang.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Are you surprised he didn't?
Well, the injury and stuff, he wasn't the same, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't the same last year. He came around at the end of the year, but he wasn't the same at the beginning. The eye injury really affected his game. If you watched some of the, and I watched a bunch of Rangers games early last year, was not the same player. He's back to that point now, as far as I'm concerned.
And hopefully we'll not have any more eye injuries like that because he's wearing the visor now.
Absolutely.
Did his, I mean, I don't recall, did his vision come back fully or did he have some sort of, does he still have some lingering effects?
I think
effects?
There might be some lingering effects, Drew. I don't know off the top of my head. I think there might be some lingering effects, but he's adjusted his game that it's not, you know, you wouldn't notice if you watched him this year compared to 2 years ago.
That's right. Why don't we head to break? When we come back, we're going to bring in Arthur Staple from Newsday. We're going to talk about the New York Rangers' sister or cousin, I guess, the New York Islanders, right atop the Eastern Conference.
I don't know if they're sister, cousin, their hated cousin.
Maybe, yeah.
Hated rival,
the New York Islanders. Right now, those two teams, by the way, they'd play in the first round of the playoffs.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun is right. The Rangers and the Islanders, that would be a hell of a playoff series. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. Alongside Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Ezra Ginsberg, our colleague, under the weather. Hopefully be back coming up Tuesday with the NHL Midweek. Note the special day, Tuesday, for NHL Midweek this coming Tuesday, of course. The Jets and the Blue Jackets play on Wednesday.
It's a late start, too, right?
The Wednesday game's a late start, 8 o'clock. It's a 6 o'clock start tomorrow night. So, you know, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, NHL Midweek on Tuesday at 6 o'clock, Jets-Blue Jackets at 8 o'clock on Wednesday, if you get that in order there. Anyways, let's head.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from Newsday on Long Island, covers the New York Islanders, Arthur Staple. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
I'm always glad to be here, gentlemen.
And how's that beautiful Montreal on this Saturday afternoon?
Cold like everywhere else in Canada in the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's true. It's actually quite pleasant here in Winnipeg today. So, you know, it's too bad you're not here like you were on New Year's Eve. Was a little colder. A little bit colder that
day.
Wasn't
that bad that night, though.
Yeah.
It's just following me around, I guess.
Exactly. You're the jinx, I guess, Arthur. People open up their newspapers today. They scan their local sports section. They head to the conference standings in the Eastern Conference of the NHL. And lo and behold, the New York Islanders are up atop the Eastern Conference. 30-13-1, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games.
Wow.
Did you see this performance from the Islanders coming?
I don't know if even they saw it coming. This has been a remarkable run. You know, it's you saw them get off the 4-0 start to start the season, beating the Rangers early on, beating San Jose, you know, not at the time to be a perennial power. And I think people, at least around the Islanders, were cautiously optimistic. They lost a couple. They were able to bounce back. Every time they've had a little hiccup so far in the first half of the season, they've bounced back even stronger. So they in the room know that they're a good team. I think it's taken a little while for that to spread to everyone else. But it's hard not to believe in them at this point. It's been long enough stretch for them to playing this well.
Arthur, I know when they announced the Brooklyn move, that you said for the most part it's going to be a good thing for the organization. Is there any kind of hesitation now? Or, I mean, obviously they're not going to change their mind, but is there any, you know, are fans on the island thinking, oh, what if this performance, this had come 5 years ago, maybe things would have been different?
You know, I think for some of the fans, perhaps, and, you know, I think some of them even still hold out some hope that once the Coliseum is renovated in a few years that the team could come back. But, unfortunately, that ship has sailed, and maybe they can put their focus on, you know, the politicians in Nassau County and the town of Hempstead who were kind of obstructionists to making anything happen over the last 10, 15 years. But, you know, it's a little bittersweet that this is the last season of the Coliseum, but I think given all the sellouts that they've had and the enthusiasm that the fans have shown, and that has been, you know, readily acknowledged by Jack Capuano and by the players, how different it feels in the middle of January to be playing to a full building that's very exciting like they had last night against the Penguins, that it's still exciting. They're not going too far away, and the loyal fans who have suffered through some pretty dark times over the last two decades, I think will follow them 20 miles to the west into the city to be able to see them keep going. They're going so well right now that I think the excitement is still building, as opposed to feeling a little bit melancholy.
You know, Arthur, you cover this team on a day-to-day basis. They're an exciting team to watch. Like, there's a great depth on this team, but also, can you speak to how fast the group is as a whole?
I mean, I think they've been able to play with that speed at times when they've been good over the last couple of years, and I think that, you know, they played at this kind of pace in the shortened season. And I think it took some teams by surprise back then. It certainly took the Penguins by surprise in the playoffs that year that they could play so fast. And it's not just the top guys that can do that. They've got a fourth line that, you know, with Casey Cizikas, mm-hmm. Cal Clutterbuck, and Matt Martin that, you know, seems to be acknowledged as the best in the league right now. And obviously the playoff runs of the Kings and the Hawks over the last, and the Bruins over the last years has shown that it's much more important to have that balance and the ability to roll the four lines rather than just have a couple guys with 100 points and everyone else just sort of standing by to chip in occasionally. So they come at you fast. They've definitely constructed a defense that puts skating and elusiveness first. They've got Nicoletti has really helped, I think, in that regard. Mm-hmm. They've got guys like Thomas Hickey who have had some ups and downs in their careers, but I think has found a home because he plays that exact style. Guys like Lubo Vizhnovsky, when he's healthy, can do that. So yeah, the idea is to play fast and transition fast and get on top of teams and cycle them around and wear them down. And it's certainly been working, again, no matter who they're playing.
Arthur Staple joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the New York Islanders, the first place in the Eastern Conference New York Islanders. Arthur, wanted to ask you about Ryan Strome. He was obviously top five pick 3 years ago. You know, this is his first sort of full year in the NHL. He had 18 points in 37 games last year. So far, he's got 31 in 44 this season. Just terrific output from Strome.
Really good here on New Year's.
Yeah, too. He was really great here when the Isles beat the Jets on New Year's Eve. You know, what's the ceiling for Ryan Strome? Obviously a top five draft pick, so the Islanders had high hopes. You know, is his ceiling, 70 points in the course of his career?
I mean, I think the fact that he's doing all this playing exclusively as a wing and not really doing any work at center, which was his natural position, is a testament to the fact that he has, kind of remodeled his game. He still has the creativity and the vision. You know, he's been able to make some great passes, but he's digging along the walls and behind the net. He's going to the net, which I think you guys saw up in Winnipeg on New Year's Eve, where he generated a lot of offense, him and Anders Lee, from kind of being right on top of the crease. That was the thing that was missing last year in his two different stints up with the Islanders, that they really wanted him to focus on going to the hard areas of the ice and getting some greasiness into his game. And he's really adapted very quickly and very well to it. It's a quick transition for a guy who really, when training camp started, started off a little slow and was kind of needed a little bit of a kick in the pants. And I think he's, every time it seems like the coaching staff or whoever it is, has something to address with him, he works on it and fixes it quickly. And he's a kid with a very upbeat, sunny attitude, and he wants to learn. I think the sky's the limit. You know, if he can continue to be this good as a wing, you could definitely see him slotting in next to John Tavares at some point. I think, if they ever were in a situation, to adjust for offense, obviously Kyle Opposo is kind of a mainstay with Tavares, but if you put Strome with those two guys to try to generate even more in the years to come, that could be a pretty formidable first line. So he's got a lot of upside, a lot of things to add to his game. He's done some penalty killing this year. He's mostly on the second power play unit. I would guess he'll move up to the first at some point in his career. So, yeah, it's... he seems to fit right in with Tavares, with Opposo, with the guys that are were top 10 picks over the course of the last few years who are supposed to lead this team.
You mentioned Anders Lee there, Arthur, and Ryan Strome may be familiar to hockey fans in Winnipeg and in Canada because of his career with the Canadian junior team and playing on national TV and on TSN. But when you talk about Anders Lee, I watched Anders play, and he really reminds me of Thomas Holmstrom from the Red Wings. He's just so willing to go to the net, which a lot of players aren't that willing to do that, and his ability to tip pucks in front of the net is just terrific.
Yeah, he's got great hands, and maybe his skating is not the best, but I don't think you need him to be that kind of all-around dominating Keith Kachuk-style power forward. He's a guy who knows where he makes his living, and he goes there without any fear. And, yeah, his hands are definitely better than I think maybe some scouts have given him credit for when he was passed over a few times in his draft year. But he's a guy who's sort of steadily worked his way up, and hard work is definitely his thing. And, spending an extra year at Notre Dame when he could have come out, I think when the Islanders wanted him to come out, he went back, was the team captain. He's also a very solid character guy, for a younger guy, and it's, you know, he was down in the minors to start the season just as far as it was numbers game, really, and he came up after four or five games, and he scores goals wherever he plays, and obviously that's got a huge value for this team. And again, you see him, Strom, Brock Nelson, you see pieces that are not only pieces of the future to kind of slot in around Tavares and Opozo in the top six, top nine, but they're huge pieces of why this team is where it is right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Arthur Staple of Newsday Newspaper. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, he had four goals last night. We have to ask about him. Kyle Okposo, tremendous season, 41 points in 44 games. A lot of people maybe once said that he was just a function of playing with John Tavares. Is he really now stepping out of the Tavares shadow and proving that, you know, he himself is his own great player?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a steady process over the last years. I think his real kind of coming out party for the NHL was that playoff series against the Penguins two springs ago, and he fought Matt Niskanen to kind of wake his team up in game two, and then ended up scoring the winning goal. That was a very strong series for him. He wasn't really playing with Tavares then. Matt Molson was still the one who was riding shotgun with Tavares, but when they traded Molson early last season, Opozo was the guy who's, you know, kind of Tavares' sidekick from now on. And I think even after Tavares' season was done, Opozo lost the last 10 games of the season to a sprained ankle. But in that, you know, month or so that he played without Tavares, he still kept up his pace as far as the points went. And he's a guy who's, much like Tavares, can be a little bit too hard on himself at times. You can see him out there when he's not at his best. He's trying to do a little too much with the puck, spinning and moving around. When he keeps it simple, I think is when he's at his best, in that power forward mold. And I think what you saw last night too, not just Tavares, who made a couple of nice plays to set him up, but Josh Bailey, who's a guy who's been forgotten at times or denigrated at times for being an underachiever, the guy that they've had on that top line left wing spot. And he made two fantastic setups on a couple of Opozo's goals, and those three guys are working very well together. I think a lot of fans are kind of clamoring to see if there's a top line left wing out there on the trade market before the trade deadline of the Islanders could get, and I don't think they need it. I think this is a team that's got 12 very good forwards that's trying to be as balanced as possible, and obviously those two guys, Tavares and Opozo at the top, lead the way, but there's not a lot of difference ice time wise and even strength between any of these four lines, and I think that's the way Jack Capuano wants it, and that's the way they're built, because they want to be able to go deep into the playoffs and be fresh.
Final question for you, Arthur. We talk about the Islanders are leading the Eastern Conference, and so usually when you do that, you're good at forward, and you're strong at forward, strong at defense, and of course, strong in net. And that's been a big difference for the Islanders this year. Yaroslav Halak just named to the All-Star team as an injury replacement. How big of an upgrade and how important has he been to the team's fortunes this year? And not only that, but the way they're able to play that fast-paced game.
Yeah, I mean, he's their MVP. There's no question about it, and everybody certainly acknowledges that he's the most important guy to this run. His calmness in net. He doesn't, early on this this season, he was giving up a few too many goals and seemed a little bit out of sorts. But ever since about the first week of November, he's maybe put one or two clunkers out there out of maybe 25 or 26 starts. He's been exceptionally good and exceptionally calm in net, and I think the confidence that comes from that allows the Islanders to play a little bit faster and a little bit, not looser. They really don't give up a whole lot, but I think they know that they have a guy back there who's going to cover up for any mistakes that are made. So they're on an incredible run right now, these last 15 games, where they've given up fewer than 28 shots a game in all of them. It's just a remarkable situation where, they brought in these, a few new pieces in the offseason to what they already had, and went from a team that everybody couldn't dump on fast enough last year to a team that's, there's no more reluctant praise to give. You have to say that they're a Stanley Cup contender in the East, because they've proven it for, almost 4 months now.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday Newspaper. He joins us today from Montreal, where the Isles and the Canadiens will do action later on tonight. Arthur, thanks very much for this, and enjoy tonight's game.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Arthur. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we return, NHL news and notes.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, alongside producer Michael Remus, analyst Richard Pollock. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you're just joining us, a recap of the big news so far today. Matthew Perreault, Winnipeg Jets winger, who was cross-checked last night in the game in Chicago, has managed to avoid, according to Ren Lavoie of TVA, has managed to avoid serious injury. His arm is, there is no fracture of the bone in his arm. He's going to be out for at least a couple of games, probably, I would say, at least until the after the All-Star break.
Well, that's two games before the All-Star break. So.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's exactly a couple games then.
That's but, a couple, Drew. You know, not a few.
Not a few. A few is three.
A few is three or more.
Three or more, exactly. So as long as so the important news is, according to Ren Lavoie, no fracture to Matthew Perreault's arm, so the Jets do dodge a bullet there. No word yet on supplemental discipline for Daniel Carcillo. And if the NHL doesn't hand it out, I'm sure there's plenty of Winnipeg Jets fans who are willing to hand it out on their part.
They play the Hawks twice more in Winnipeg this year. And
Three weeks less a day. It was 3 weeks yesterday. They play on a Friday night here against the Blackhawks. And
3 weeks less a day, Drew. I thought you were going to be like a fortnight plus six.
I could have done that, too. I could have done a fortnight plus six. But you know, if Daniel Carcillo is in the lineup that game, you can be assured that Anthony Peluso or any number of Winnipeg Jets players have taken his number and will be happy to hand out some retribution for what was a dirty hit last night against on Matthew Perreault. Talk about some news and notes from around the NHL now. We start in Nashville, where the Predators are going to be without goaltender Pekka Rinne for 3 to 5 weeks as he's sprained his knee.
Mid-February. Be back next week.
That's right. If he's a Winnipeg Jets injured player, they're all mid-February and they're back in a week. But Pekka Rinne going to be out of the lineup. They say 3 to 5 weeks. He was injured Tuesday night in the Predators' win over the Vancouver Canucks. You know, Preds still atop the Central Division, tied for the most points in the NHL with the Anaheim Ducks. How much faith do you have in Carter Hutton being able to carry the ball for the next 3 to 5 weeks?
Well, not a ton, Drew. I mean, Carter Hutton's okay. He's a backup netminder, and Sean Burke was on earlier in the show saying that that's the biggest difference for him in the speed of the game and the amount of depth goaltending, depth goaltender-wise in the National Hockey League. He's not Pekka Rinne. Pekka Rinne is probably your Vezina winner this year. He's a dominant National Hockey League goaltender. Ask Barry Trotz last year. Now, he was there last night, and Carter Hutton got the win against Trotz and his new squad in Washington. So that's
first
big
win of the year for Carter Hutton.
Big win. You know, get some confidence there. That's a huge thing. But you look at Pekka Rinne, I mean, again, he is... The Nashville Predators play a different style under Peter Laviolette than they play under Barry Trotz. And it's nice to see both of them having success after being let go from their previous positions in Philadelphia and Nashville, respectively. But Peter Laviolette plays a certain style and is able to flourish under, you know, employing that style because of the tremendous goaltending ability of Pekka Rinne. So he, for sure, it's going to be a loss. Now you get that All-Star break in there, you get 5 days of that 3 to 5 weeks, so you're going to have to be, what, you know, 5 to 7 games you're probably dealing with?
Yeah, give or take. I don't know exactly what their schedule looks like. But
you have a cushion, which helps you. If you look at the standings right now, you're 6 points up on Chicago with the game in hand. But I think probably by the end of that stretch when Rene's back, if you're tied with Chicago and St. Louis, you're probably saying, okay, I don't know if they can. They certainly can't keep up this pace without Rinne, as far as I'm concerned. They've 8-2 of their last 10, but that's a huge loss. Yeah. Huge loss. I mean, if they were going to go into the playoffs, for example, without him, I think they'd probably be out in the first round. That's how important he is.
They have 5 games in January still to come. So, you know, if you take, you know, another 2 weeks on top of that, you're looking at the middle of February. They got another 8 games there. So you're looking at about closer to 13 games without Pekka Rinne potentially in the lineup, depending on if it's worst case scenario of, you know, 5 weeks, or best case scenario of 3 weeks, or if he's a Winnipeg Jets injured player, 1 hour. But anyways, that's a little tongue in cheek there. So that'll be an important, you know, every team's got adversity they have to carry over. The problem is, I mean, with the exception of maybe Shea Weber, he's the most important player that that the Predators couldn't afford to lose.
Well, I mean, you could, yeah, that's true, Drew. I mean, Shea Weber's a Norris Trophy candidate, and I mean, it's him and Rinne, and their defense as a whole is very good.
Yes,
but Rinne is the key there. Rene is, if they had to pick one guy to probably lose, to be honest with you, they'd probably pick Weber over Rene because of how important Rene is. And, well, and because of having Seth Jones and because of having Yossi and the other defensive depth they have.
Yeah, and we saw what the Predators were like without Rene last year. Now, it's obviously a different system, new coach.
Sure, but I mean, I think it might even be... It's important in both cases. Pekka Rinne, yes, is probably Vezina favorite right now. Can he still win him with the injury? We'll see.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his numbers are just incredible. He's 29-6-2, 1.96 goals
Come
against
on,
average,
I mean,
930 save percentage.
Like, where are you getting that? I mean, that's as good as you're going to get.
The Predators have two home losses all year. They're 18-2-1 at home in Nashville, which is a tremendous record. And we know that the Predators have been playing lights out hockey so far this season.
You know how many teams have allowed more goals than the Predators or less goals than the Predators?
I'm going to say the answer is zero.
That's correct.
Yeah, they're 30th in the league in goals against.
Or first in the league in goals against.
Pardon me, that's right. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
First. And that, I mean, that again, that speaks to Rene, it speaks to the defense, all that stuff. But that's Rene, end of the day. If you're going to say one reason out of it all, it's him.
Yeah.
It's a huge loss. So they can hold, if they can tread water here and keep up with, keep Chicago and St. Louis around them, a 6-point buffer with the game in hand. If they can end, you know, if they can go into those last, what, 20 games or so with 20, 25 games or so with, you know, even with those teams, probably okay with it.
Yeah. Predators going to be playing tonight in Detroit. So we'll see what they do on the second half of a back to back with some travel involved.
But I don't care so much about the travel. Just Carter Hutton never plays back to back.
No.
So that's a thing you have to take into account.
Well, I mean, we saw Carter Hutton here earlier this year. Thunder Bay.
Well, that's, he always plays, almost always plays here, yeah.
That's right. So, I mean, you'll see, you know, it's certainly time. They're going to ride Carter Hutton. Do you think they go out and make a trade?
Well, I know Adam Proto mentioned that earlier in the show. Does he think they're going to make a trade? I mean, 3 to 5 weeks, Drew, again. So if it's 3 weeks, you're not making a trade for 3 weeks with a buffer of 6 points and a game in hand. You're not. Right. If it's 6 or 7, which it doesn't appear to be, then you might want to consider it. But, I mean, what are you giving up?
Who's, like, who's out there even, really, goaltending-wise?
What are you going to do? Bring in, like, Marty Brodeur? Like, you're... You just go with Carter Hutton and see what happens there.
Yeah, you've done enough that you have a bit of a buffer, so it's not panic time. You know, it's not like they're fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot right now. They've given themselves enough of a buffer that if they tread water during the next month or so, and they and it's a 500 record or a little bit of a sub 500 record, it's not the end of the world. In that case, moving to Boston, Brad Marchand suspended 2 games for his slew foot on Derek Brassard. I believe that occurred in...
That's a joke. That's a joke of a 2-game suspension. Brad Marchand's a dirty player. To slew foot a guy about a foot from the boards is absolutely ridiculous, and he gets 2 games. 2 games. Come on. I mean, let's get real there. He could have broken both of his legs.
Sure.
That's a ridiculous suspension. I mean, come on. Have some guts there and make a call, as Stefan Kuntel. Come on. 2 games. Slew foots him going right into the boards. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That is unbelievable to me.
Well, and the most bizarre part of it, again, is...
By the way, Bruins 5-0 since you wrote them off.
I know. I'm well aware of their record since I wrote them off. The most, the most surprising part to me about the 2-game suspension is, again, this isn't a player who's got a clean
also
record.
Also true. Absolutely.
This is a guy who's, his legacy of dangerous play and cheap shots is well documented. Now, he's more talented than Matt Cook or Daniel Carcillo.
Yes.
But his legacy is well documented. And again, if you come down and you say to Brad Marchand, this is a 5-game suspension, is there anybody that's too upset about it?
No. It's the gravity of the actions here. He slew foots a guy while skating right into the boards. The guy could have broken both of his legs, could have broken his neck. Who knows what would have happened there? Sure. It's a ridiculous play. Well, it's blatant, too, and he's done slew foots before if you watch him. So come on. I mean, that you have to put the hammer down at some point here. This is way worse than Carcillo. And I don't like Carcillo. And I don't like Carcillo, his game, or the play last night on Pro. If Jeff fans are going to be mad about this, go and watch the video on Marchand slew footing Brassard while skating into the corner. Worse.
Sure. I mean, Ryan
Garza. So that's the thing. If you want to use that rationale, if they only give him 2 games, they're probably going to give Carcillo a pat on the back.
Or a $500 fine or whatever the max amount of a fine it is. You know, when you look
$1,000, right?
Yeah, I think it's $1,000. They upped it, I think, in the new CBA. Yeah. But, Ryan Garbutt, when he slew footed Dustin Byfuglien early in December, he got 3 games, and that.
It was an open ice, right?
Open ice. There was
still a terrible play, but an open ice.
Yeah, no risk of running into the boards or anything. Oh. I mean, this
Come
was
on,
a
it's ridiculous.
A bizarre one.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I would agree with your outrage on this instance. James Myrtle, the Globe and Mail, reports about some dysfunction in the San Jose Sharks locker room and in their front office between Todd McLellan, the head coach, and between the general manager, Doug Wilson, regarding Adam Burrish, of all players, where the coach, you know, wanted to play Adam Burrish. The general manager instead puts him on waivers, and the two individuals are apparently at loggerheads now. It's just still a bizarre situation what's going on in San Jose.
Are they going to do anything in the playoffs?
No.
Blow it up. Do something. How much longer are you going to wait, Doug Wilson, to do something about the core? You're going to strip away the captains of Marlowe, then you're going to strip away the captaincy of Joe Thornton? I wonder if the coach is a little frustrated, and he's going to take the brunt of the criticism here. I mean, you have disconnect everywhere there. And then the lack of reaction. I mean, what do you... I just don't understand that organization at all. We can talk all about success. I'd rather have one cup than a bunch of failures like they've had.
You know, if you're looking at the current standings in the Western Conference, if you're looking at the eight playoff teams...
Their depth is not what it once was, Drew. Defensively, you know, offense, their depth, and some injuries and such, but just not what it once was.
No,
they can't come at you. They have a bunch of guys there who just are not at the level of the guys they've had before. The goaltending is suspect. There's no trust in the organization. There's probably no trust. If there's no trust between coach and GM, which is apparently part of the report, and I'm not sure how he would have that information, but if there's a disconnect between coach and GM, we know there's a disconnect between players and GM.
Mm-hmm.
You don't strip the captaincy off Thornton and think there's not a disconnect there. I mean, this is dysfunction everywhere.
You know, you're looking at the eight teams that are currently in a playoff spot in the Western Conference. The team you probably want to play of all of them is the San Jose Sharks. Maybe the Vancouver Canucks, but I mean, you don't want to play the Los Angeles Kings because of the Los Angeles Kings.
Right.
The Jets are going to play you hard, and I mean...
No, you know, the Jets are better than San Jose, I think.
I think they are, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, we saw them, you know, lose to San Jose on home ice, obviously, but push comes to shove. Which team do you trust most?
Well, Jets are still some of their guys weren't back from injury yet on that game either.
Right. I mean, which team do you, you know, in a seven-game series, which team do you, you know, think is going to fold
more? They also didn't have trust in Niemi and Stalock last year. If you remember the playoffs, I mean, they were flip-flopping goaltenders, too. I mean, there's no trust. This team's in disarray.
Yeah.
And they just don't do anything about it. They've never done anything about anything.
It's a weird situation in San Jose. It's something to keep your eye on. And if they, you know, continue to sort of tread water, or if they ever did end up struggling.
Adam Burrish. I mean, that's not the issue. That's just something that comes out here. There are bigger issues than that. Burrish is not any good. I mean, he's going to be your fourth line winger who can do whatever. But I mean,
he's not
the difference maker. The problem is the core guys that you haven't dealt with, or the big defenseman that you never got, or whatever it may be.
Agreed wholeheartedly. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around at some of the trade rumors making their way throughout the NHL. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two:30 in the afternoon. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca.
Got a funny text from my brother. It says, all it says is...
It's a little random of a text.
Yeah, I guess we were talking about the Jets some earlier in the show about an old game or something. What were we talking about?
No, weren't talking about the whiteout. We weren't talking about the Jets at all, really. Vaguely we were talking about the playoffs, but nothing specifically.
All the text says is, Drew's white pajamas at the last Jets 1.0 game.
It's... True. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly, I sort of dyed my hair white for game 3, but not for game 6.
They won game 3 and didn't win game 6. Maybe that's why.
That could be. Maybe it's my fault. Yeah. And I don't think they were pajamas so much as they were a one-piece long underwear I was wearing.
Wow. I don't know if I'd pay money to see that.
No, you'd be horrified.
Yeah, I'd be horrified.
Yeah. You'd be horrified to see it, but...
A onesie.
It was
a
onesie.
You call the onesie?
Yeah, that would have been a onesie. I think onesies nowadays are probably more fashionable or more societal, more appropriate.
Remus, were you at any of those games?
No, I watched
one. CKD. Remus.
We'll leave that one. I don't think that was where you watched it, Remus, but forget it.
Some of the games were, but anyways.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. In any event, yes, I did. It's true. Your brother, I don't know why your brother brought that up or remembers it randomly.
Well, I mean, he must have. Well, he was at the game, so obviously he remembers it.
Well, he might have been traumatized. I wouldn't have known your brother back then, though.
Oh, Drew, you were a big shot back in the day.
I was not. I mean, how old would have your brother been at that time?
For the 96 game?
Yeah.
He would have been 9.
Yeah. So, I mean,
same as Michael.
Right. So I don't think I would have really remembered your brother very well or had surprised he really knew who I was back then.
Well, things have only gone down from there.
There's only one of us in this room. who's going on dating with a celebrity or dating with a star.
I knew that was going to get brought up again.
Yeah, that's you, my friend. Coming up in, what is it, I guess 10 days from now.
10 days from now.
On Wednesday. It's for the...
next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Not this coming Wednesday, but the Wednesday after.
It's true.
The Blue Jackets game. Between the Penguins game and the Flyers game on that Wednesday, you're going to be at Dating with a Star.
I'm doing pre and post for both of those games, too, so it'll be a nice kind of sandwich there.
Wow, so people are going to be like, I heard you broadcasting the game.
No, no, no. I mean, who is this guy?
Yeah, who is this bum? How did we get stuck with him? Anyways, let's talk about some of the trade rumors floating in and around the NHL as we approach the trade deadline.
Trade rumors? There's no trades in the NHL anymore.
I know, but the trade deadline's coming up. You know, 6 weeks away, give or take. Monday, March the 2nd, special edition of NHL Midweek, which will be early in the week, given that it's a Monday. But anyways, Monday, March the 2nd.
NHL early week. It's like when Sunday Night Football on NBC is on Thursday or whatever, Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, exactly. It just changes around. Yeah. It's Sunday Night Football on Thursday. I'm like, what? Keith Yandel and Antoine Vermette. We'll talk about the Arizona Coyotes. We're going to see them tomorrow night here in Winnipeg anyways. Keith Yandel and Antoine Vermette, I think we both expect that they're going to be on their way out of Arizona before March 2nd comes and goes.
Yandel isn't depending UFA. Vermette is, if I recall correctly. If you look at Antoine Vermette, of course he's going to be a guy who's going to have a value. Why? Because he can play in your top six. He can play in a scoring role or a checking role. Probably in the middle of those two. A second line is probably exactly where he's best cast. I think that, you know, it's helpful in that he can play wing and center. And he can play in all situations. So guys like that are very valuable. You've heard of Boston having interest. We believe Peter Chiarelli having a connection to him back from their Ottawa days. But, excuse me, what team wouldn't want a guy like that?
Sure. He fits probably seamlessly into most every team.
Into most every team. That's why a guy like that will have a good market. And there'll be a bunch of teams, you know. Now, if you're Don Maloney, you have to make sure that you... That's the kind of guy you might want to hold on to a little bit longer to see who else comes into the picture.
Sure.
But showing that, you know, with the Devan Dubnyk trade, he's not afraid to make a move early. Keith Yandel, on the other hand, is, you know, teams want offensive defense. But now Keith Yandel, he has to be put in the right situation. First off, he's got to be put with a good defensive defenseman because he gives it back in his own end. Mm-hmm. Now, power play-wise, he's very smart. He makes very good reads, and he can quarterback that power play, and he can move the puck out of his own zone, skate it out of his own zone. So there's a lot of asset value to Keith Yandel, but it's not all great. I mean, you can't trust him at the end of games. You're not going to throw him on the PK. So if you're going to pay a guy that much money, and then you have to be giving up a guy. You know, I heard some rumor of O'Reilly for Keith Yandel.
Yeah, that's the talk, is that Ryan, because it sort of fits a need.
You're
for
doing
both
that
teams.
In Arizona in a second. I don't see Colorado doing that trade, Drew. I just don't see you trading for a flawed defenseman like Yandel, who's older than Ryan O'Reilly. When in reality, Colorado needs a guy, and I know the money is an issue there for sure. Don't get me wrong, but you could argue they're both overpaid. But O'Reilly... You have a bunch of guys in Colorado, skill, speed guys. I mean, O'Reilly can score and such, but he can also play in all situations. So I don't see that being the trade. I do see both of those guys moving, Yandel and Vermette. I don't know if I see O'Reilly moving, though.
Well, this was going to be my next player I was going to mention was O'Reilly. You know, he's sort of got the interesting situation that he's a UFA after the next season. Mm-hmm. And there was the... I don't know how much animosity there was. It sounded like there was some animosity between his camp and the Avalanche when he was, you know, he was signed to that offer sheet by Calgary, and there was sort of back and forth, and it was sort of a weird situation regarding Ryan O'Reilly. You know, he's got 24 points this season so far.
Well, the issue is, Drew, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, he's an RFA after this season and then a UFA after the following season. Is that correct?
I believe that is the case. I mean, again, no cap geek anymore, so these things are a little bit harder to confirm.
And so what happens there is...
They have to qualify him at a real big ticket.
That's exactly right. And if they don't qualify him at that ticket, then what happens is he becomes an unrestricted free agent. And if he becomes an unrestricted free agent, what happens is... Sorry, he's on the books next year for 6.2.
Yes.
So $6 million cap hit for the next for this year and next year. So there's no qualifying issue there. But the question is, after next season, if there is animosity, do they trade him? I don't see the need to immediately deal him at the deadline. I think that's kind of like a Bufflin thing. It's the exact same situation in the sense that they're both UFAs after next season. You have to make a decision, I think, in the summer as to what you want to do with him. But I don't think you need to make a decision just right now.
Are the Avalanche, I mean, they're not concerned about Nathan MacKinnon, but, you know, it's probably an easier decision if Nathan MacKinnon looks like he's ready to step in and be a centerman on that team. And it doesn't seem like he's totally seamlessly fit in.
Well, he hasn't for sure, and that's true, Drew, but... I don't know if You could argue that. You could say those two are related. But, I mean, if you're, depending on the structure of your team, you could throw those three guys at center, DeShane, McKinnon, and O'Reilly, depending on who you're playing against and what their center matchups are, if it's L.A., for example. So I don't see the need to absolutely trade O'Reilly. I do think there's a need for defensemen on the back end there. But if you have a need for defensemen, in my personal opinion, Keith Yandle isn't necessarily the guy you want to go out and get. It's personal opinion.
Sure, because of his defensive shortcomings.
Yes.
Craig Anderson in Ottawa apparently is open to being moved if that's something that the organization approaches him with. You know, he had signed a contract extension in the offseason in Ottawa, and obviously things haven't gone the way they had hoped this season there in the nation's capital.
So where would he go?
Well, I mean, he's under contract for the next couple years. He's under contract for the next 3 years at a cap hit of $3.188 million.
Where's he going?
Pardon me, he's under a cap hit of $4.2 million. He's $3.188 this season. And then his new contract kicks in.
San Jose?
Well,
Edmonton?
I don't know. How many teams are really in the market for a goaltender?
Minnesota?
Craig Anderson at the
age of... None of those teams, San Jose is making... We just talked about them last segment, of course, but there's not many teams in contention, if any, who need a goaltender.
A goaltender who's already in his early to mid-30s. Yes. I mean, he's currently 33 years old, so if you're trading for him, he's going to be, you know, 36, 37 when that contract expires.
He's been really good, though. I mean, for the most part, he's been a real nice performance there in Ottawa. So there are the teams that I think of is San Jose. Maybe you want to solidify that back end and change things. And that would be a bold move by Doug Wilson. Right? I mean, you had your Brent Burns trade and your Danny Heatley trade. Mm-hmm. But, you know, bold moves haven't always been his big thing in terms of that core, and we mentioned that. Edmonton, obviously, for changing the direction, but that's kind of an odd trade to make now, depending on, unless there's really good value there. And then Minnesota, but again, you know, way after that trade should have been done if that was a way they were going. So I don't see, you know, goaltenders, we can talk all about it, but as Sean Burke said an hour or two, there's so many good goaltenders in the National Hockey League now. You know, where's it going to be? Sure. And what's Ottawa doing there? I mean, are they trading him? I understand. You know, I like the idea of paying Leonard and Anderson kind of a combined starter, big-time starter salary to get 82 games out of these two guys. Are you suddenly saying Leonard's good enough to do it? I don't disagree with that. I think he has the talent to be that guy. That's an awful quick change of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, Anderson's had 28 starts this year to Leonard's 15. I mean, Anderson's number is very good. 2.3 goals against average, .929 save percentage. Look at Leonard. You know, and he's playing on a bad team. 3.16 goals against average and a .900 save percentage. So, you know, to your point, though, you know, are you willing to change course that quickly?
Odd, right? Isn't it odd?
Yeah. You know, why sign him to the big, you know, to a decent money in the offseason if it wasn't...
Well, I mean, it gives you a value of an asset to be able to trade.
Sure.
You can understand that. Just seems like that was their plan. Now it's changed. Why is what I want to know. And to your point, has Leonard performed to the... And I like Robin Leonard as a talented goaltender. But to your point, has Leonard performed to a level that's pushed them to make this decision? It doesn't appear that's the case.
Let's go to Toronto now. All the talk, of course, with the Leafs regarding, you know, they went on their West Coast trip through California and they weren't even competitive in any of the games, although we're supposed to be applauding them because they didn't give up any shots in those games either.
Yeah, because none of the players care about process.
It was bizarre. I mean, they're all praising the Leafs.
The team is such a mess. It's unbelievable. I don't know why I got to watch them the first 10 minutes of every sports cast in this country. Oh my God, it's embarrassing. They're awful. Get them off my TV.
The only thing the Leafs were good at was playing in transition, and now they're not allowed to play in transition anymore.
That's true.
They're not allowed to be a quick strike offense. So let's talk about the players on the Kessel, Phaneuf, Bozak, I guess, James Van Riemsdyk.
Van Riemsdyk's not going anywhere because his contract's so favorable. Bozak, I don't see going anywhere right now in terms of their center position. If you look at Kessel and Phaneuf, okay. Well, I mean, the market for those guys is going to be, if it's there, and I think it probably would be there more for Kessel than for Phaneuf. But depending on eating money and taking something back and keep, you know, picks and such, I think both those guys could be dealt. But why trade him now when the cap's like this? It's uncertainty about next year's cap will be. You trade him at the draft. Then you make the move. And again, that goes to the question of what we asked Adam Proto. He doesn't know if Dave Nonis is even in charge, but if Dave Nonis is involved in this process and yet you're going to fire him, it appears, after the season, why is he involved in this process?
Sure. It's a question we've asked on the show about different general managers for the last number of years.
Scott Housen in
Columbus back in the day.
Right. I just don't get it. I don't particularly understand how these organizations are all working. But, I mean, aside from the Raptors there, I mean, you have obviously Lewicki and MLSE leaving. They're trying to find a replacement for him. They can't find one. They asked for him to come back, or apparently were thinking about asking him to come back. Then you have the involvement. So that's then you have the involvement of the Blue Jays, you know, all the president of the Blue Jays, all the issues in all these organizations that are involved with the other big company. Just it's a whole schmozzle. I mean, who knows what's going on there? Seriously, so here you have the Leafs. Who's running the Leafs? This coach isn't going to be there. Who's going to be the coach? Mm-hmm. Does he want Kessel? Does he not want Kessel? Who's the manager? Is he make? When you have this many questions about an organization,
it's no wonder there's dysfunction.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this question quickly before we have to go to break. You know, can the Leafs get a return for, say, Kessel and Phaneuf, or is it just more of a salary dump?
No, Kessel you can get a return for. I mean, a guy's going to score 40 goals a year. You might not like what he brings to the table necessarily. 40 goals a year. If you can't get a good enough return for him, you trade him. I mean, you keep him, excuse me. In terms of Phaneuf, I mean, that's a different story. You're looking at a guy who can play in the top four, but it probably isn't your top two guy. He has a skill level. There's certain parts of his game. His defensive willingness at times is questionable, and his skating ability, I think, is not what it once was, and his ticket's big. But if you can eat some money and you take some money back, I think it's a contract that can be moved, but you're not getting value back. Like, you're not getting value back.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good choice by Remus there.
You approve of that Bruce selection to wrap up the show?
I'm going down. That's good.
There you go. One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Of course, programming note, want to mention it again. Tuesday night, note the different day. Tuesday night, 6 p.m., NHL midweek here on this fine station. Of course, the Jets and the Blue Jackets are playing on Wednesday night, thus moving us to Tuesday night. Got it? Good. Okay. One final segment. Remus, you're going to join us for some rapid fire. You got the bumper ready?
I got a lot of opinions. I'm ready to shout them out for rapid fire.
Well, we should cut your mic immediately.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday. In an article published on the Players Tribune, that's Derek Jeter's website.
This whole show's felt like rapid fire.
Yeah, it's sort of been an energetic couple of 3 hours here this afternoon.
Couple 3 hours, that would be two.
I know, 3 hours. Couple few hours. If I said couple few hours, is that 2.5 hours? Yeah. In an article published on the Players Tribune website, Logan Couture said the LA Kings center Anze Kopitar is the most underrated center in the NHL. Do you agree with Couture? And if not, who is the most underrated center in your opinion?
Well, I don't think Kopitar's underrated. They've won the Cup twice, right?
Yeah.
And he's been the number one center on the Cup team. Pretty dominant player. I mean, I don't think he's underrated at all. That's kind of an odd one to me. I think he's a great center, but I don't think he's underrated. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how many guys in this day and age are underrated?
There's not very many, because as soon as anybody gets a little bit of sort of notoriety or has a little bit of a performance, everybody's looking for stories, everybody's looking for angles. Nobody sort of hides under the radar for any significant length of time.
Yeah.
You know.
The most underrated number one center. That's a tough one, because if you're a number one center, then you're really not underrated usually.
No, it has to be number one center. The question just says underrated center. I have two, and I'm not going to say them only because they're on my fantasy teams.
Okay.
But one is Carl Soderberg on Boston. He stepped in nicely. He's a free agent at the end of the year. The only good center out there. And the other one, he's a number three center. Franz Nielsen on the Islanders. Best shootout guy in the league. He plays some big minutes. Had a great game here in Winnipeg on New Year's Eve.
To that point, Franz Nielsen, I love, plays power play, penalty kill, plays every situation, can play all over the ice, third line center, can play your second line center. I think Brian Little's become an underrated center in this league. I think he's been great, certainly exceeded my expectations, so I would have him on that list as well.
There you go. Last night in the AHL, Lake Erie Monsters goaltender Reto Berra, the Colorado Avalanche organization, became the 11th goalie to score a goal in the history of the AHL. Upon scoring, he went to the team's bench and did a flyby celebration with his teammates, much to the chagrin of the opponent, Chicago Wolves. Here's a couple quotes from the Chicago Wolves. This is Colin Frazier. "It's not every day a goalie scores, and congrats to him. Celebrate it by all means. I just didn't like the flyby our bench and rubbing it in. It was a tough end to a game for us." Here's Chicago coach John Anderson. "I think it's a wonderful play by him. I just didn't think the way he celebrated was necessary. I think their guys would have come down to him. They were happy for him. Heck of a play. Good for him. To do that and jump up and down, again, it's a wonderful thing. But come on, you're in the other team's building. You can't show them up like that. Overly sensitive, or was Bear's celebration over the top?
I mean, yeah, it's over the top. And you have to flyby?
Yeah, I did the flyby.
For a goalie?
I watched it. You know what? He scored. Players do the flyby all the time. Why can't he do a flyby? He wanted to join
but
in.
But like the Jets, well, the Jets, when Harrison scored against Florida the other night, I don't think he even did the flyby because no. They were up by so much.
Neither did Kane.
Kane didn't do the flyby either. Yeah, no. You can't do the flyby when you're goalie scoring. You can skate around your own net and like, put up your hands. You can't do the flyby.
Hey, he's excited. He's had a tough career. He's back in the AHL. Let him do the flyby.
I'm of the opinion. You've never seen a goalie do a flyby before. There's probably something to be said for that. And there's a reason why goalies have never done it. And again, you're Reto Berra and you're playing in the AHL. Maybe, you know.
Is it Reto or Reto?
I don't know.
I thought it was Reto.
Really? I thought it was Reto. It doesn't matter. He's in the AHL.
Is it Berra or Barra?
I have Berra. But again, I could be wrong. After losing 7-0 at home on Thursday night to the Minnesota Wild.
I tell Remus to call Rick Ralph, but God knows, Rick Ralph doesn't want to hear any more from Remus.
No, we see enough of each other.
Yeah. Sabres forward Drew Stafford said the following, quote, after a game like last night, I'm surprised that people are still showing up, end quote. They say that misery loves company.
I think Drew Stafford would be a nice fit on the Jets' third line for the stretch run if they could get him on the cheap.
Well, what's on the cheap? What would you give up for him? That's not the question I was going to ask anyway.
Sorry, I'm just thinking out loud there.
That's fine. Think out loud.
I have to give that more thought. I think Drew Stafford would look okay beside Adam Lowry and Vander Kane.
You've liked Drew Stafford for a long time.
I don't love him. I think he's talented and put in the right situation. I think he's not good over Matt House, Chuck.
I remember when the Jets, wasn't it a couple years ago, the Jets were trading Alex Burmistrov for Drew Stafford?
Yeah, that was a rumor. I like that. I think that would be a nice fit. Anyhow, sorry.
He is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year.
I know that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, the question is, they say that misery loves company, so in that spirit, what is the worst sporting event you have ever attended? Because a 7-0 hockey game has got to be up there for anybody that was in attendance there.
I went to a few Banjo Bowls. I think the Bombers got blown out like 50-3 or something by the Riders. It was awful. I'm going with that.
Yeah, you know what? There's about four Bomber games in the past couple of years I've been to. I think there was one I went to against the Riders that they didn't have a first down in the first half.
There's probably more than one.
It's always fun if it's nice out, though. So that's, you know, I've been to some bad baseball games, too. True.
I went to a baseball game in the Metrodome. I thought the game itself was fine, but just the experience there was terrible. You were inside in the summer. The rows were so long, I spent the whole game passing money and beer up and down the row.
I went to a Expos game against the Cubs at last year of the Expos at Olympic Stadium. And aside from the fact that I could hear Khalil Greene on the Padres at the shortstop talking to his third baseman, which I thought was really cool, that was a terrible sporting event.
Yeah, I went to a Miami Heat-Indiana Pacers game back pre-LeBron and post-Reggie Miller, I think.
Wow.
And it was one of the worst events I've ever seen in my life. It was painful to be there. Not a big basketball guy to begin with, but that was a bad event.
Is Tim Hardaway still playing?
I don't even remember who was playing. It was a lousy game.
Dan Marley?
Sorry, I went as a fan to Claude Noel's last game that he coached the Winnipeg Jets against
the
Blue Jackets.
Blue
Jackets, and they got smoked. They didn't play any defense. That was a really bad game. And after the game, I was walking with some friends to a bar. And it was like, man, they got to fire the coach. They can't play like this anymore. And next day, they did. I was surprised they actually did it.
It's because they listened to you. They were waiting for you to give them the go-ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
On October 16th, 2003, then-Nashville Predators defenseman Dan Hamhuis scored his first career NHL goal. Unlike many players, he didn't bother to get the puck to commemorate his first goal. Now, 11 years later, the puck was found in an old equipment bin, and the Predators gave it to the now Canucks blue liner. If you were Dan Hamhuis, what would you do with the puck now that it's been found 11 years after the initial goal?
Put it on a mantle?
Yeah, frame it with a picture of the goal.
It's an easy question.
Give it to my parents?
Yeah, true. I mean, after last week's ref you suck question, that's a close second for worst question of the year.
We'll say, you know, Shea Knighty still hasn't got the puck from his first goal. Rick brings it up all the time, so there is hope for him.
Do they know where it is?
I don't know. Oh. Did they know where this puck was? They just stumbled upon it.
Maybe
it's in some bin in the Coral Center. Sorry, Scotiabank Center. Sorry, the Canadian Tire Center.
Sorry, they're tearing it down and moving downtown.
Yeah.
Hang on. Do you remember the original name of the arena in Ottawa?
Kanata Ontario Arena?
No, hold on. It was the Palladium.
There you go. It was the Palladium.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Last question. On Wednesday night, while announcing that the Anaheim Ducks did, in fact, score a goal after video review, referee Brad Watson accidentally said Atlanta instead of Anaheim. If this was to happen again, what former NHL team would you want to see accidentally credited with a goal?
Well, I think it has to be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I don't know. Hartford? Kansas City Scouts?
Kansas City Scouts, you know, that's California Golden Seals.
Yeah.
Cleveland Barons?
Barons?
Yeah. Colorado Rockies?
I think Toronto Maple Leafs, though.
You're
the best former NHL team I've heard in a while.
Alrighty. Remo, you want to finish it off with cheers and cheers?
I sure do, Drew.
Okay.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something shaped like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard.
My cheer this week goes to Rob Blake. He's having his jersey retired by the LA Kings. And I have to tell you, growing up, Rob Blake was probably one of my favorite defensemen. The way he played, big shot from the point, coming up with the Kings in that 93 series against the Leafs and almost winning against the Habs, and then going on and winning the Cup with the Avalanche in 01. Big shot. I thought he was Canada's best defenseman in the 98 Olympics. He had that patented hip check with his bottom, and always a classy guy, and give him a cheer this week.
Remo, you have one?
I'll cheer, I'm going to cheer the Chicago Blackhawks. A video came out on NHL.com the other day where the Patrick Sharp took a blind 6-year-old girl to a game, and she kept saying it was the best day of her life, and it was a very heartwarming video, and reminds us why we love sports, and makes me feel lucky that we're able to do what we do here, and you know that we can experience NHL hockey with our own eyesight as well.
Well said.
Well said. That was very well said. I'll wrap up. I'm going to cheer the Nashville Predators, their fans, and the tribute they paid to Barry Trotz last night. The Capitals played their only game in Nashville this season, and the fans gave Barry Trotz a tremendous ovation. He was obviously visibly moved by it. So credit to everybody involved with that nice homecoming there in Nashville.
He sure seems like a likable guy if you had a chance to watch the documentary there before the outdoor game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests. Adam Proto of the Hockey News, Sean Burke, the goaltender coach and assistant to the general manager of the Arizona Coyotes, and Arthur Staple of Newsday Newspaper. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. We hope our buddy Ezra Ginsberg feels better, and we hope to see him back Tuesday night for NHL Midweek.
He'll be here.
Note the start time, Tuesday night, 6 o'clock. For producer Michael Remus, for analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.